Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. It is a mini party cast. Pernell and Chris are here. How are you two doing?
Doing okay.
Party.
Life is life, though. I will say one thing. It's not a review because it wasn't given as a code, but I'm still going to just throw a recommendation out there. Just a flat one. Dyson Fold is really fun, and it has become like the perfect like mental distraction for me in a lot of ways.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go after you.
No. I thought that was the end of the sentence. So I was about to start a whole different sentence. So please do continue your sentence.
Okay. This sentence was going to end with me saying, it's a lot of fun. It's a dirt cheap game. And it's one of those games where it's easy to learn, but you'll be playing it for a while. It's fun. And I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Now I'm done.
Cool. No, I was just gonna say that I'm officially halfway through my trying to beat 50 Switch games in 2024.
Oh,
so I'm right on time now. I was ahead, and then I fell way farther behind than I thought I would, and then I picked it back up. But yeah, so I've been starting
what was
like
the last two.
The last two were Antiquia Lost, which y'all may have heard me talk about before, because I usually use it as kind of a baseline for talking about Kemco X-Create RPGs, because it's a particularly good one, at least for its time. I think it's been surpassed by, you know, by a long shot by their more modern stuff. But I finally, like, I was so close to the end. I was literally two dungeons away from the end. So I was like, you know what, let's go towards that ending. And I did, and I'm glad I did. And I found out it has multiple endings, which I kind of suspected because it has a affection system. So any game with an affection system is going to have variant endings, right? Like you gotta.
Who loves who? I love that person. Give me an ending.
Yeah, exactly. So I got the Sarifa ending. She's the fourth character, and she's my favorite. And she only won by like 5 points, so it's not exactly like a, you know, like a runaway or anything, but I did get her ending. And then I beat Assault Suits Valken Declassified, which I also reviewed. That's the not expanded, but restored version of what we know in the U.S. as Cybernator. Okay. So that great Super Nintendo mech side-scrolling, both shooter and kind of platform shooter, like a platform shooter and a shmuppy shooter, basically. That was a hard one. Like, even with the quality of life, like, unless you're just save stating all the time, which I was not, I only set save states. Well, I set save states until I realized, oh yeah, I can just set it on free play, because that's where I'm setting my states anyway, is right at the beginning of the level. So I just turned on free play so I'd have infinite continues, and yeah, eventually I got to the end. The final boss took me over 20 tries. No, it was good. It's a good boss. You know, I like a nice hard boss sometimes, especially if the game is fun.
For the win, it's great.
Yeah. And I actually finally started Monyu, the full title of which I will not say because I don't have it right in front of me. No, I do.
It shouldn't give you too much trouble. It felt, I mean, I like it, but it definitely felt like so you're new to dungeon crawlers. Check this one out. But I like it.
It's very Etrian Odyssey inspired. I could tell right away. I was like, it skips past the wizardry. Like, Class of Heroes very much feels like wizardry, but like Monyu feels more like, hey, here's another take on like Etrian Odyssey's specific formula, except for the mapping. So.
Yeah, the mapping is a lot more like, or even the dungeon exploration is a lot more, only if you played it before, they call it like a demon telling you, I'm already forgetting the top of my head, but it came on the Vita at first, and then it got released on PS3. Crap.
I don't know.
It's going to come to me later, but it's like, I'm going to Google it a second while you talk. Right, Demon something. I'll tell you in a minute.
Well, I was going to say the thing about...
Yeah, Demon Gaze. There we go. Oh, yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I have that too.
Yeah, it plays like that, with the whole like enemy marks are always visible and stuff like
that. Yeah. And I find it really interesting that you can gain like really cool rewards by keeping your party low level to, like, you know, so the first boss, they're like, if you could beat him at level 3, you'll get a 5-star rating. So since you can choose when to level up your characters, I'm kind of withholding a little bit and being like, oh, let me keep him at level 3, see how powerful I can get and see if I can do this.
So, yeah, I do like that mechanic a lot.
I'm immediately trying to, like, you know, probably do the expert style, like, you know, what you're supposed to do for a second playthrough type of attempt at the game. So it may take me a lot longer to beat this one. But
it feels rewarding when you pull it off, so it's worth it.
Yeah. I also, for the first time in 7 years of owning it, or 6 or 7 years, started a game of Axiom Verge, which is pretty good so far. Yeah. Well, I have it and I have the sequel, and I'm just like, I need to play this, man. And then I also, the one that I got the most into, like, after those other two games, is Sword of the Vagrant, actually. I've started that finally.
Remember that one from somewhere.
Yeah, Pernell reviewed that one.
No, I didn't review Sword of the Vagrant. Did I?
I thought you did.
I don't believe so. I just remember the game proper, but I don't think I reviewed it.
I thought you did.
To the YouTubes.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue when it involves looking up something. So, well, somebody reviewed it. Somebody reviewed it, and they didn't give it, like, the highest marks or anything. But, like, playing it, I'm like, this is like a... It looks like tries... it, huh?
Tim reviewed it.
Oh, that's weird. Okay, I totally got mixed up there. Well, that makes sense then that Tim didn't give it a great review, because he's usually pretty withholding on that.
Yeah.
But, no, I think it's fun. It's actually, it's giving me, well, for one, of course, the look of it is, like, very VanillaWare, but, like, the gameplay of it is, like, a less good version of Ars Libre Revision. But, I mean, a good version of Ars Libre Revision is still potentially an excellent game, so.
I really need to play Ars Libre. I bought it for my train ride, and I never started it.
It's so good. I'm hoping that DLC comes to the console soon. The extra roguelike dungeon.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you if you played, but that explains why.
I did. I reviewed it. But only the Steam version.
But you want it on Switch.
Okay. Yeah. It's great, though. I really do want it on Switch, because I like it on Steam. But yeah, Sword of the Vagrant, pretty good. And it's like, I think it's on the Steam sale right now for like 79 cents or something like that.
Damn.
So if you are a Steam person, that's a worthwhile pickup if you can.
I am literally browsing the store now. I'm addicted to the Steam sale.
Yeah, I mean, it may have changed since yesterday. I don't know, but I saw it there whenever I was... I think it's because I was looking it up, because its name on Steam is simply The Vagrant. So that's one thing to know. For some reason, they did not call it Sword of the Vagrant.
Well, speaking of sales, we got to dive into some Ball Squad territory. It said Ball Squad. It's our pinball news pinball interlude. There's a massive Pinball FX sale going on Xbox right now. I don't know if it's going on any other platforms. GoldenEye in chat mentioned that there was a big sale going on. I checked. Every table that I didn't own was on sale.
Wow.
So
now you own them, huh?
It was only $25. So
pretty good.
And normally the one pack alone was a $30 pack, and it was down to $10.
Wow.
I'm so happy.
Snatched the fuck out of them. Oh my god, my pinball table collection is complete.
Sweet. Yay, no more buying. Not just kidding.
That's exciting, right?
Fucking yeah!
Here we go.
Hey, Yeah, I didn't say. I mean, yeah.
Say the line, Purnell. Fucking yeah.
No, all you might be dance.
Yay!
So, Purnell, you know what I'm drinking tonight?
There's another Mountain Dew?
It is another new Mountain Dew.
How many ways can they mix the same five chemicals to produce something?
Well, this is a new one. It is called Infinite Swirl. It is a 7-Eleven and Speedway exclusive. It is pineapple berry.
That sounds good, actually.
It is fucking delicious.
I don't know how they do this. They just keep producing chemical drinks.
If you have a 7-Eleven near you, check them out. Pick it up. It looks like a Nuka-Cola.
Oh, now you got me thinking.
Like Nuka-Cola Quantum, the blue one.
Mm-hmm. A bottle which I still have in the fridge, and I'm afraid to drink it. It might kill me at this point.
One thing that... completely off the topic, but you got me looking at Steam now too, and it's like, I know everybody is like, you know, they're very, you know, cursing the Steam sales, curse you, you've taken all my money, but like, when I look through it, I'm just like, oh, here's a whole bunch of other games I already own on the Switch, and, you know, seeing like, you know, some game I've already bought for like 25 cents on here, it doesn't affect me at all. I'm just like, well, I already got it.
For me, it's like the opposite in that sense, like, up until I got this device, I was doing all the stuff on the Switch, and then once I picked this thing up, it went the other way around.
Yeah.
So, but due to being on here, now I'm like, well, now I know things go on sale, so I don't want to buy anything at MSRP anymore. Wait for the sale. So
even the Steam Deck itself is on sale.
Yeah, right?
Is it?
So it's like,
yeah. 15% off right now. It's like just under $300.
Damn.
And the way I look at it, it's like, when you reach that weird point where, like, wait till everything's on sale, that's what drives you to be like, oh, crap, okay, a sale's going on, the Steam sale. What's all this stuff that I put on my massive wish list? What if those games are now on sale? And then you just go through your wish list, take that, and then you end up with the stupid massive shopping cart. So it's a weird habit. I always tell people that the Steam store is my favorite video game.
Yeah, I got a similar... Well, the eShop's not my favorite video game because it doesn't work, but, you know... if they traced the amount of time I spent on it like they do the amount of time I spend on YouTube, then it would count as a top video game for sure.
I will tell you, if there's a thing that I really hope they get right with their new Switch when they finally release it, they need to get that damn eShop in order. Because there's no business for it to be that way. There just isn't.
And bring back the music.
They got rid of it?
There's no music in the eShop. No. Like, there was in the Wii U and the Wii and the 3DS. Well, no, the 3DS didn't really have it. Huh?
I get what you're saying. Now, for some reason, my brain... It's been so long, I thought there was music in the eShop. I'm just... hearing the clicks in my head, I suppose.
Yeah, it's just clicks, and you decide the rhythm there. Well, you don't really, because as you move the cursor, it takes it like 5 seconds to like move, so you kind of can't get a very good rhythm going here.
Yeah, get your shit in order, Nintendo. You've got the green. Just
maybe get some slow dub or reggae in there, but you'll never get any blast beats out of this thing.
Well, I guess we know what the music for this episode is going to be.
Slow dub and reggae?
No, the 1UP's doing the Me Channel.
Nice.
I'll tell you, though, there's that... I'm not sure if...
Super Guitar Bros did a great version of that, too. Oh, go ahead.
There's that... I feel like there's not enough love to the 3DS shop music, because that track is a jam, too. Like, I would go there often when it was closing up, and I actually would just browse it and listen to it.
Yeah. I right now can't recall it, but then again, I just woke up from a nap, so my brain is not got great recall at the moment. I'm just kind of here in the moment. I'm drinking just standard Dr. Pepper. I'm not fancy like everybody else.
Have you tried the coconut one yet?
No, I don't. I don't much like coconut flavor, unless it is combined with some stuff very specifically.
Like rum.
Well, I don't drink, but yeah. Like something, there are appropriate flavors to mix coconut with, and I'm not yet convinced that Dr. Pepper is going to be a winner there. And
I haven't tried it yet. I found cans of it, but I don't think I want to risk a 12-pack on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I might someday, but I'm not going to spend my own money on it. It's like, I might, you know, if somebody hands me a coconut Dr. Pepper, I'm not going to be like, ew, you know, get thee behind me, Satan. I'll just be like, oh, okay, finally, I'm going to try one of these.
Yeah, if I were a fan of coconut itself, I'd be down. But since I don't like it, it's like, why even bother?
I mean, it's good on, like, I like a German chocolate cake, for instance, and that's got coconut in it. I like a nice Mounds. I don't like Almond Joy. I don't like the almonds in there. No. I love almonds, but I don't like them in candy. Nice. Yeah. Exactly. Ooh.
People in chat loving coconut. Or Acolyte and Brie love coconut.
I am the opposite of your typical nerd in that if somebody expresses a love for something that I dislike, I'm happy about it. I'm like, well, great. I'm glad that it has a fan.
I stand outside the zeitgeist. No, with that said, if somebody whose taste I know and acknowledge says, this is actually pretty good, you should try it, that might make me go, maybe I should try it. But if, again, it's coconut. I know I don't like coconut. So the odds of me liking a coconut-flavored thing are slim. So even if someone's like, yeah, but that's good, I'm like, I can't. I just can't do it.
They like it, and I think they're cocoa nuts.
Oh!
No, I don't mind coconut flavor. I don't like the texture.
Yeah, I get that.
I can't bite into coconut. It's crunch is ugh.
It's got a weird squishiness to it.
And truth be told, that may be the majority of it for me. So, I mean, I've dealt with coconut milk, but with that said, I have consumed coconut water and thought that was disgusting too. So I don't know if that's an issue with coconut there or if it's just the aspect of coconut water, but I do know I hate shavings. So why I could do coconut milk but not coconut water is anybody's guess.
Very cool.
We'll never
know. It's not cool. I wish I liked coconut. It's uncool.
I know. I was being silly. I like the Body Armor energy, not energy drinks. They're just like the hydration drinks, like Gatorade, but they have a little bit of coconut water in them.
Yeah, so I do like those.
Gives it a nice, rounds off the sweetness, I guess. Doesn't just taste like, you know, unsweetened Kool-Aid.
I saw a new Powerade flavor today that almost had my interest. It was watermelon lime, but Powerade sour. I'm like, no thank you.
Yeah,
watermelon lime sounds great. Sour, no thank you.
Yeah, no, I don't need no sour drink.
I don't want to pucker when I drink,
especially if it's a hydration drink, you know. Yeah. Like if it's I could see something like a soda being that way, just because, you know, if you drink it slow or something and you're into that, but like hydration drinks, you're supposed to drink them pretty fast.
Really?
I mean, I guess they're for hydration, so I assume you're not supposed to sip them.
Well, keep that in mind.
Chug.
I mean, don't listen to me. Yeah, like, I'm a notorious chugger when it comes to like soft drinks.
Like, part of me wants to enjoy the flavor. The other part of me wants to get that hydration.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just kind of like, well, I'm thirsty. I'm going to drink this in like 5 seconds. It costs like $10.
How hydrated are you?
Maybe it's a good thing I don't drink. I'd be like, you know, one of those frat kind of bros.
One other thing we have to mention quick before we move on. If you have ever considered buying any of our merch, we have a coupon code. You can save 13%. By using the coupon code Gaping Butthole.
Okay, just don't buy
right.
The shirt.
That's right.
Just don't buy. I would have bought the shirt and you gave me some Gaping Butthole goddamn code.
Use that code and you could save 13% off any order of merch from our merch store.
Like googly muggly. Like, you know.
I even placed an order myself to test the code and it worked.
Hooray.
So, I'm going to have a new shirt next week or two.
I got nothing against gaping butthole. So I'll take the damn Coke. Man, you're like, what is wrong?
I may have to buy one. I'll probably be throwing away some shirts pretty soon.
Well, stock up, because we got like 3 different ones. They all look kind of the same.
Stock up, Buttercup.
Yeah. But they're in different colors, so.
Yeah, and I like the nice blue.
I think we have a good color selection.
Oh, man, PlayAsia. PlayAsia just showed an official Mega Man t-shirt that they're selling that it's basically like the Famicom cover of the original game that shows like the cute Mega Man and all the robot masters from the first game. And they have it in my size and I want it, but I can't afford it.
Oh,
but maybe,
well, if you put in
maybe
the Coke gaping butthole, you might get a discount.
Right, right.
Only
I haven't tried it.
PlayAsia had that coupon code.
Yeah.
There's someone listening right now waiting for you to test the waters.
Jacob was so proud when I sent him a picture of coupon code accepted, gaping butthole. He was
amazing.
Pretty happy. Yeah. So yeah, that's the news I have. Anything else you two want to talk about?
I think I'm good. Just looking through the eShop.
How was Too Many Games?
Oh yeah.
It was fine. I mean, people charging way too much for games and people buying them. I saw some friends and spoke with them for a bit, so that was nice.
I did see some of those.
I almost didn't want to go, but ended up popping.
I did see some of those price tags you posted on Facebook. Pretty egregious.
Yeah, there's some gnarly pricing
out
there.
It was bonkers. And the fact that someone actually spent the crazy money, I was in the presence of it. It was like, I've been going to TMG for a year, and that was the first time I saw someone actually make that happen. Like, while I was nearby. Like, how much did you spend just now? I was like, enough. And then the other guy just like kind of gave his ass right away. He's like, I just refinanced my like $500,000-$600,000 house. And wow. He paid more than my mortgage payment for that gate.
Lord.
It's like, well then. And that response, like, are you happy with your purchase? He was like, I was like, you better be happy. You just spent the money. Don't pull that shit now.
He's like, well, I'm just gonna try and flip it for another thousand.
What did it go for?
Huh? It was a box and instructions and a copy of Little Samson with box and instructions mint.
That's
so it was
good.
Opened, but it was in mint condition. So he
how much was
got
it?
The coin. Greater than $3,500.
Yep.
Damn.
I remember that one being I think I saw it for $100 on eBay back in the day. If I remember, I'm trying to remember what the lowest price I've seen it for is.
That is crazy.
Meanwhile, I saw another person selling a copy of it just card alone for $2,800.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw that one in your pictures.
You enjoy that.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, you have fun with that, you rich bastards, because I am not that guy. But I did take those pictures of a lot of games I do own, and was like, yep, I'm glad that's worth money. I bought it when it was MSRP or on sale. When nobody thought the game was worth a damn, and I'll take it.
I mean,
though every time I see Rule of Rose, I kind of kick myself because I wanted to buy that when it was new. But I told myself at the time, I was like, I gotta stop buying so many games. I'll just wait for it to go on sale or something.
That's your first mistake.
Yeah, never
having any kind of restraint.
Always. There's the thing, like, most of my games, I feel like had exactly that happen to them. So it's like, the one time you don't, that's the one that goes to Supernova. And you're like regretting never buying it. I'm only happy that the game apparently sucks. So, in that regard, okay. Rule of Rose. Like, once you get past the shock value themes, it's not very good.
Well,
what's that up to now?
I can tell
you. I know it's like.
It's like $600 to $700 for complete.
Jeez.
Yeah, I don't think there's too many, like, modern console games. Or not even modern. I guess technically PS2 isn't modern, but. I can't think of too many games on PlayStation, if any, that would hit numbers like Little Samson got. Because I feel like by that point, the hobby was already bulletstorming enough that
sold for $700. Yeah, damn. Rule of Rose.
Go-Go Hyper Grind on the GameCube is reaching those heights. I think
like
you can't get that.
Like 4-digit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't think you can get that for under 1,000 right now.
Now, I do regret not buying that then because, geez. Well,
recently sold five.
I bought it.
Yeah.
I had the other game that was like it and then returned it to the store. So that one got announced. I'm like, I don't need this again. It was Yanya Cavalese. That's the one I used to have. I took it back to the store.
It had the little skateboard included with it, didn't it? For your fingers, the little
fingerboard. Yeah, the tech deck skateboard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I'm. It must have either gone down recently or I was bamboozled by my local retail place because, yeah, it was like $2,000 at one point that I saw.
Sealed Hypergrind went for $1,200.
Gotcha. I hate to say that sounds like a bargain, but like because of the level of like collector BS that we're talking about here, it feels like, oh, yeah, $1,200. I could do that.
I could go back in time and tell myself not to sell my GameCube collection. Oh.
And or in my
be
case,
selling it right go now. Back,
God yeah, damn pretty right much. I would.
Or in my case, if I could go back and tell myself, don't let your dad tell you to throw all your cardboard boxes and manuals away. Well, not manuals, but cardboard boxes, because while in a normal, sane world, that makes logical sense, we don't live in that world. We live in a world where the box adds $500 to the cost of some of your games.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. Freaking Mega Man X3.
Oh, yeah,
I will
yeah.
say I am ready for that Shatter stuff though, because I didn't. The last game console I ever sold any, like, you know, did a mass liquidation for was like the Genesis and the Super Nintendo, like that era. Because I was like, I want to buy a Saturn. My brother already has the PlayStation, so I can't buy that. So I guess I'll get a Saturn, buy a Super Nintendo collection and Genesis collection. But then once I got my first job, I was like, why the hell would I ever sell anything? I'll just save up and buy the stuff I want.
Yeah. So. That was my same deal.
Yeah, because at that point, I was like, I want to keep my stuff. Because I realized, even with the Super Nintendo, I was like, I was going back and wanting to rebuy games I already sold to people. So this was before emulation was truly big. The best we had was a Nesticle back then. But I was like, you know, now I'm wanting to buy all this stuff back. So I've learned my lesson. Never sell my games, because I'm going to always want it back. So I stopped selling games. The only time I got rid of a game was if it was during that 10-day return policy at Electron Boutique, and I finished the game within 10 days, I took it back to the store. Why are you returning this game? You made it too short.
Pokemon Box, big box variant that comes with the cable,
$4,500.
Wait, which Pokemon are you talking about? Oh, Pokemon Box specifically, okay. The one that really blows my mind is Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver.
Yeah, because those are common. They're very available, but just expensive because, yeah.
Wow, that goes for $200
bucks. Because of Pokemon, I feel like there's... they were selling for $900 at the con.
The internet's been making fun of half-price books for pricing a box copy of Legend of Zelda Minish Cap for $400.
Oh, Lord.
And I'm like, that's just as arbitrary as any of the rest of this. Like, yeah, it's not worth that much to resellers at the moment. But like, God, you can't really blame half price books for just seeing Nintendo first party game and wanting several $100s for it.
Like, worst case scenario, no one buys it and then they reduce the price. Best case, someone walks in there and says, oh, shit.
Yeah,
I can't fault them for it.
Luckily, all my Game Boy Advance and Game Boy boxes are intact because I keep them in a rubber bin and I just keep that thing with me.
The funniest thing about it is, for as much as I get all geeky, I'm like, yeah, my games are worth this, my games are worth that. I outright acknowledge that short of me like hitting like a state of poverty or something, I don't think I'm ever going to sell them anyway. So it's almost like just a badge of pride to say my game is worth this much money.
Yeah, it's the fate of my games is definitely going to be something tragic. Either it's
like I die.
Either I'm gonna die and it's just gonna end up, you know, getting pushed off on someone else, you know, to people
That'd
who
be
have
a
to,
hell of an inheritance.
Right. And I don't even have a will, so it's like good luck, y'all.
Leave it all to the cats.
If video games are still worth anything, or hell, if they're even still functional by that point, I mean, it all just goes to my nephew, and he can just find somebody that knows me to sell them for.
Yeah.
So I know you don't care about this stuff. Just know, here's a number. Call this guy. Have him flip him for you and give him like 20%.
Right. Yeah. That's so it's either it's gonna happen like that, or some fire's just gonna claim them all, and you know, I'm just gonna say F it and stick with, like, I don't know, build me a mister or something like that.
Or water. Like, I have a friend that happened in their collection that their collection got flooded, and they've been spending years like trying to rebuild it. I'm like, true, yeah. Emulation at this point, man, I ain't rebuilding nothing.
I mean, where I live though, fire is much more likely than water.
Oh, true, true.
That did happen to a friend of mine, so you know, it's real tragic, but fire. You know, what can you do? Fire's a thing.
What was his takeaway? Is the question I got now. Like, did he do what my one friend did, and now he just wants to recreate the collection, or did he go, I'm sad it's gone, but easy come, easy go, I gotta move on from my collection.
I wouldn't say easy come, easy go, necessarily, but, I mean, yeah, he's been dealing with it really, really well, I think, and just slowly rebuilding, basically, and showed a picture of, like, all the burned up cartridges, and, you know, he is trying to see if, like, any of them still work, because Nintendo carts, you know, miracles do happen.
Oh yeah, that Contra 3 that got hit by a car.
Yeah, the Game Boy that survived Desert Storm.
Didn't they send that back to Nintendo headquarters now?
Yeah, I think so. But
at one point it was in the Nintendo World store, just set up running.
Yeah, it was just if you've not seen it, Google Game Boy that I think you could just Google Game Boy Desert Storm. I don't know. I'm gonna try that.
Probably.
The Game Boy that survived the Gulf War is what it's called. And yeah, if you look at it, it's just like a hunk of plastic at this point. But for some reason, it just got singed enough to look like just a pile of goo that can still turn on and play a game. So, pretty great. Good old Game Boy.
Good old Game Boy. Anyway, speaking of games, we have three to talk about tonight. Should we get to them?
Yeah, let's speedrun it.
Start the clock.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is an email review from our friend Horror Acolyte for Killer Clowns from Outer Space, the game, developed by Terravision Games and Illphonic, published by Illphonic, released May 28th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Plan your own alien invasion and harvest humans as the iconic Killer Clowns, or gather a team of survivors to fight the extraterrestrial threat. A game based on the 80s cult classic movie. Welcome to a new crazy take on the asymmetrical multiplayer horror experience. Again, Horror Acolyte wrote in a review, this is what he's got to say. Killer Clowns from Outer Space is an asymmetrical multiplayer horror game based on the 1988 cult film of the same name. Alien clowns have invaded the town of Crescent Cove, torment its citizens, and harvest their bodies to fuel the clownpocalypse. Sold. The town citizens must do their best to escape the looming threat by any means necessary. Players are randomly assigned the role of clown or human at the beginning of each lobby. Although you do not get to choose which side you are assigned, there is an option to set a preference which will slightly boost your chances of ending up on your desired team. The clan has three members versus the seven on the human team, with clowns scouring the map in search of their prey while humans try to collect specific items needed to help escape. Unfortunately for the humans, there's a 15-minute timer for each match, the end of which triggers the clownpocalypse, resulting in a cotton candy dust cloud enveloping the map, eliminating all humans who have failed to make their escape. Each round takes place at one of five locations around Crescent Cove, including an amusement park, summer camp, and downtown area. Most of these locations have a pretty distinct layout that allows for slightly different strategies for both teams. As a clown, your primary goal is to kill all the humans. This can be done in one of three ways: depleting a human's life to zero, killing them once they are knocked down, trapping a human in a cotton candy cocoon and letting them suffocate to death, or trying to trigger the clownpocalypse early by fully powering four generators scattered around the map. Each clown comes equipped with two weapons, one that helps entrap humans in a cocoon, and another that damages their health. Most of the weapons damaging health are melee weapons like boxing gloves or a clown mallet, with the exception of the popcorn bazooka, a projectile-based weapon that blasts humans with popcorn and also allowing them to be temporarily tracked. When you do manage to deplete a human's health and bring them to their knees, you can perform a stylish clowntality, a humorous instant kill animation.
It's warranted.
The sigh was warranted. These can show you whacking a human into the air with a trusty mallet, only to see them fall behind you with a glorious splat sound effect. Their body hits the ground, or rapidly pummeling a human with pies until their corpse sits within a small mound of mushed pie remains. This sounds pretty great. While killing a singular pesky human may be worthwhile, don't forget about the clown apocalypse. It may be more worthwhile to turn a human into a cocoon. Spread out around the map are four generators, each with four hooks to house a cotton candy cocoon. Wow, that's hard to say. Also scattered around the map are a finite number of cocoons that can be carried back and hooked up to a generator. Powering these generators gives clowns quicker access to abilities to aid them in hunting the humans, as well as spawn alien lackeys that will patrol the area around the generator. These tiny imp-like aliens will help carry cocoons to their assigned generator and grapple nearby humans, while also creating noise notifications to alert clowns to the human presence. Trapping a human inside a cocoon can be done with one of several ranged weapons, like a cotton candy ray gun that fires a continuous beam at moderate range, or a pentashot, which is essentially a shotgun. Damaging humans with these weapons creates a temporary bar above them that, once filled, will automatically wrap them in a tasty cotton candy cocoon. However, you need to be quick in your assault, as the bar will start to deplete over time at a rapid rate if the human target remains undamaged for too long. There's one downside to turning humans into cocoons instead of killing them outright. Once in the cocoon, the humans have a couple minutes to live. During this time, they can break free from the cocoon on their own if they have a sharp weapon, or be freed by another human. This means you need to wait out the timer to ensure their demise, or leave them hooked up and hope no one comes to their aid. While hunting the humans, you also want to look for escape routes. These routes can be covered in cotton candy that survivors will have to waste time trying to remove before they can use it to escape. Humans can also create noise either by running or failing skill checks, triggering noise notifications that make them easier to track. As you progress through the match and power generators, clowns will gain access to three pre-assigned abilities that are extremely useful in taking down humans and punishing them for their mistakes. Some useful ones include a teleport ability that allows you to warp to any explored area of the map, a hypnotic lure that will attract the targeted human towards you, and a dog companion made from balloons that will help you track humans with moderate proximity. Once an ability is used, it will go on a brief cooldown. It should be noted that both humans and clowns have limited stamina for running, so gauging the best time to use abilities can be the key to turning the tides in your favor. You'll get to choose your clown's class and loadout before going into a match. There's five types of clowns to choose from: Ranger, Tracker, Trapper, Tank, and Brawler. Each of the types varies in stamina, movement range, damage output, health, and ability to sense human movement, ranging from smaller, more agile clowns to larger clowns that are slower but more durable with higher damage output. Both sides start with limited classes and loadouts to choose from, but offer new options as you gain experience and increase your account level. This also includes additional choices for clowntalities and cosmetics for clowns and humans. Switching sides, the goal of humans is to stealthily search the map for supplies and key items to help them escape. Four escape routes are placed randomly around the map, each requiring two specific items to become usable, such as gasoline or spark plugs. These exits include a bomb shelter, motorboat, tunnel, and teleporter. Once activated, most escape routes have time limits to how many people can escape, or have limits to how many people can escape through before it's unable to be accessed, with most exits allowing 2 to 3 people to escape. Once the proper items are collected for an exit, a few time-based skill checks need to be completed to install the items. This requires you to press the right trigger button once a marker falls within a specific zone that appears on the screen. Failed skill check won't affect progression, but it will trigger a noise reaction alerting the clowns. These skill checks are also used when removing cotton candy barriers covering escape routes and freeing humans from cocoons. Much like the clowns, humans have 5 classes to choose between that vary in stamina, movement speed, and strength. Around the map, you will find utility items and weapons to aid in your quest. These can be found inside containers or just lying around. You can only hold 4 items at once, so choose carefully. utility items come in the form of consumables that allow you to restore health and stamina, throwables to briefly stun clowns and create noise, or items to help mark and find escape routes. Weapons can be blunt, sharp, or projectile-based. Some of the clowns from each category include baseball bats, wrenches, knives, axes, pistols, shotguns. Clowns' health can be depleted with any weapon, forcing them to be knocked down. They can only be killed with sharp and projectile weapons with a targeted hit to their shiny red nose. Each weapon has limited durability and ammo, so choose your encounters carefully. Also worth reiterating that sharp weapons can be used to escape cocoons at the cost of using up the item, so it may be better to save them for a timely escape instead of killing a clown, which only removes them from the field for 45 seconds before they respawn. Sometimes it's better to just run, trying to outmaneuver clowns by vaulting over obstacles or jumping through windows. There are also some objects around the map that you can try to hide in, like garbage containers or portable bathrooms, or maybe taking advantage of the natural terrain like a well-placed bush. If you aren't having a very successful time trying to escape within the last 30 seconds of the map, the Terenzi brothers will show up breaking through a cotton candy wall on the edge of the map, giving you a free exit to escape if you can find it in time. Although death as a clown is only temporary, if you die as a human, there is still hope. On the map is a singular resurrection machine that can be used once per match to revive every survivor that has been killed. While you're dead, there is also the chance to still help your teammates and possibly yourself. After dying, you're given the chance to participate in a series of reflex and memory-based mini-games like Whack-a-Clown and Pop the Balloons. Completing these games allows you to pick between three unknown cards that give you a random item out of any normally available in the game, including key items used to open escape routes. These items can be given to other teammates or kept for yourself in case you're revived. As someone who has not seen the Killer Clowns movie, I still found a lot of enjoyment in the game. Visuals and sound effects for the clowns are great. Stealthily moving around the map as a human, only to hear the sound of clown shoes rapidly approaching, or the nefarious laughter of one of the clowns is both hilarious and daunting. Hunting survivors and turning them into cocoons only to toss them around the map, or performing a well-earned clowntality on an especially meddlesome human, very satisfying. I really appreciated the post-death minigame mechanic. It was a great way to keep players engaged with the game during a time that would normally be spent mindlessly waiting or doom-scrolling social media. Killer Clowns uses proximity chat and can sometimes get a little frustrating if one side is staying grouped together the whole time and your team is not very cohesive while the other team is well-coordinated. The aiming and hit detection felt a little questionable at times, along with balancing and variety between the different classes for each side. That could have been a skill issue on my part very well. On occasion, the queue times for a match were a little longer than I would have liked, but the player base seemed good enough to get into matches pretty quickly and consistently. If you're a fan of asymmetrical multiplayer horror games, I think this is a game worth checking out for some good lighthearted fun, even if you're not familiar with the source material. You'll probably get a lot more out of it if playing with a group of friends over playing solo. Although Killer Clowns has a decent amount of strategy, if you're looking for a more competitive experience, then this game might not be for you. Either way, I would wait for maybe a slight sale before picking it up, especially if you're playing solo. I also don't think the Digital Deluxe Edition has enough value added unless you happen to be a big fan of the movie or fairly certain you'll be playing the game for a considerable amount of time. Anyways, enough clowning around. Has anyone else developed a strong craving for cotton candy? Just make sure you know where it came from.
Sneaky, sneaky. Yeah, I can agree with what he said there.
100%. Oh, my throat's dry. And I someone love talk so I could take a drink.
Blub, 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 blub. Like I said, I genuinely agree with what he was saying about the game. And that review was very well written, too. Yeah,
it's very well written.
I feel like it does. It's a much better game when you play it with friends, but I could see it getting dry playing it by yourself for a long period of time. So in that regard, it's definitely not the sort of thing where like I'd be paying like a full crazy price for it. Like, what's the MSRP for it?
$39.99.
Yeah, I wouldn't be cutting that kind of cash for that game, but I'd get it on a sale for sure because. And I'd also have to convince other friends to buy it with me because playing with other people, you can get some good yelling going on. Actually, it was a time where it was like a LAN situation where you got a bunch of people playing it in the same house, which is a rare thing to even pull off this day and age. But you can also pull that up with headphones and so like have like a good party chat going in Discord or something. And that's a lot of fun to do. So it makes a game, it adds a lot of charm to the game because now it's not just hearing squeaky shoes. It's your friend on the other end going, I'm looking for you. I'm going to find you. You're like, come on. exactly. Like, and the humor bleeds through and through. Like, there's a lot of humor in that game. And I will tell you one thing for sure too. Those near escapes, they're the best. Absolutely the best. You're like, well, I guess I'm going to lose because it starts counting down to that last minute before the clown apocalypse really goes into full steam. And you're like, okay, I can't quit. I can still get out of here. And you're looking around. And like, that was one time I was escaping as the pink cloud was actually covering the screen. Like my character was doing his auto animation to run off the map. And I was like, there you go. That's how you get it done. Times like that are really freaking awesome in that game. So it is a lot. It can be fun. It can definitely be fun. I 100% nice. Agree with what you said about waiting for a sale, though.
Jordan 650 in chat saying, I'm here for Horror Acolytes review. Moving on, next review to talk about is Neo Sprint, developed by Headless Chicken Games, published by Atari.
What a dick.
I mean, you missed it. Like, you literally just missed. Amazing timing, really, when you think about it. But yeah, next game to talk about, Neo Sprint, developed by Headless Chicken Games, published by Atari, released June 27th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. The exhilarating Atari racing classic Sprint series returns. Neo Sprint zooms back to life as a single-screen arcade racer for up to 8 players, paired with a robust track builder and intuitive sharing tools, ensuring a racing experience that satisfied speed demons and architects alike. Purnell, tell us about your time with Neo Sprint.
So Neo Sprint, not to be confused with Super Sprint, which a lot of people may have had exposure to from the NES days. This game is based off the arcade version of the game, as I was told. So the way this plays is you get a variety of options, but the base form of it is you go into the campaign mode, which is a series of cups that are composed of 4 different tracks, 3 basic tracks, and then a 1v1 versus race against another opponent, like a specific opponent. When you start the game, you have other cars on the track. You have a top-down view of the entire track. Think of it like an RC car track. And at the start, count of 3, you have the acceleration option, the brake option, and a handbrake option, and then steering. And that's pretty much your entire options for control. They keep the game very straightforward and simple, but it doesn't make it any less fun to play. Enemy cars can be very chaotic when they're coming at you on the track because while you're driving the car, you are not immune to collisions. So if an enemy car bumps into you, it can knock you off your kilter and vice versa. You can do the same to other racers as well, which makes for a fun bit of a time when you have that happen. Lots of chaos ensues. 3 laps and the race is over. And each lap on a race can go pretty fast. It's very rare you'll do a race that takes where a lap takes more than a minute, usually within like 30 to 40 seconds even, which is great to me because it makes it for a good pick up and play experience. You go through each of those races. If you pull them all off and win, you will ultimately unlock the next cup in the string, but you'll also unlock parts and accessories for customizing, future races if you want to build your own track. You also unlock additional cars that you can select for the races themselves. So if you find yourself wanting to, just mess around with new cars in that way, you're good to go. And each car differs by both the design and also the stats, which are acceleration, max speed, and turning. So give a variety and reason to get cars. Though unlike the NES version, unfortunately, there's no like car improvement as you race through a campaign. What you see is what you get, which is honestly fine. I was missing it at first, but I came to adjust and accept it because it's just fun to play. Campaign racing is straightforward racing. No obstacles, no issue, just you, the track, and your opponent's cars. However, once you do the Grand Prix mode, which includes tracks that you've unlocked from the campaign mode, those races have obstacles on them as well, or rather you have the option of adding them should you choose to. Obstacles can include like arrows to accelerate your car or to slow it down. It could be oil slicks, traffic cones, barriers, and such like that. That just adds a little bit more chaos and a little bit more fun to the races. I honestly prefer racing with the obstacles as opposed to without. And then beyond that, there's like free racing and track construction where you can kind of construct your own tracks and then use those tracks, whether the ones you made or ones found online, to create a cup, like a personalized cup to have races based off of. And then time trials and multiplayer. The game itself, for me, has proven itself to be a good bit of fun. Like, it brought back a nice fit of nostalgia, though if you're the type of person that doesn't want to deal with the top-down, which the original version was built off of, they also included a mode that kind of where the camera focuses specifically on your car, so that you get a little bit more spontaneity when turns come up, and it's not so easy to tell how close other cars are to you. So it adds a little bit more tension to the race, too. So you don't have to necessarily just do the top-down RC car methodology to it. Beyond that, though, I think the game is a ridiculous amount of fun. It's good for, again, good for pick up and play, good to just unlock a bunch of stuff, and when your creative juices start flowing after you've unlocked a variety of parts and components, get down to business, start constructing tracks of your own. Come up with your best versions. I also like the fact that the different tracks themselves have, there's like elements where the track can go over other layers of the track. So you can get that little bit of a mystery where a car is going under the bridge and crashing into the wall or something. Or you might go under the bridge yourself and collide with somebody who's stuck down there. If you're playing multiplayer, it could be fun to just kind of be a jerk and just park your car under the bridge so that someone drives under it and smashes into you. That kind of thing. So overall, as quick as this review may be, it's because it's kind of a short and sweet arcade style game. I do believe this is a solid purchase and worthy of a person's time. And I'm glad I came through the show because I didn't even know that Sprint was getting a revival like this. And lo and behold, here we are with it today.
Yeah, well, it clocks in $24.99. Your thoughts?
So buy it. 100% worth your time. It's a lot of fun. Again, pick up and play gameplay in the racing genre. I'm always happy to find some of that. And unlike the old games, there's also music too, so that nabs down one of the final complaints I could have had for a game like this. So definitely a buy.
Very cool. All right. One final game to talk about tonight is Beyond Good and Evil 20th Anniversary Edition, code provided to us by Ubisoft for the purpose of this coverage, developed by Ubisoft Montpelier and Virtuos, published by Ubisoft, released June 25th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, PC for $19.99. Armed with her precious fighting stick and faithful camera, Jade's adventure will get you to freely explore Hilly's combat and creatures. Explore Hilly's combat creatures, large and small. Infiltrate dangerous areas, solve enigmatic puzzles, play addictive minigames, race the best hovercraft pilots, and take pictures of the whole experience. Chris, tell us about your time with Beyond Good and Evil's 20th Anniversary Edition. Just saying it makes me feel old.
Yeah, it's true, because I was very aware of this game back in 2003 when it, you know, first came out on PS2. It was always been like kind of an interesting one to me, because it kind of came out at this time when we were very wanting as a in the West as a video game consumer society for more video games with actual female protagonists. Used to be quite rare. Like Tomb Raider and Metroid were around at this point, but I mean, gosh, this sure wasn't much else. Especially not somebody in a game this like not big, but like ambitious, let's say, like kind of full of stuff. I actually have owned this game for many years and still had not played it until reviewing this 20th anniversary version. So I'm finding that was a tactical error on my part, because I normally this doesn't happen to me, but I was kind of fooled into thinking that this game was it's the game where you take pictures of enemies, take pictures of things instead of whatever. But it's not really it at all. I mean, pictures are just one of the many things that this game has, and it still does it like well in a way that's fun. So it's kind of like, definitely feeling a little bit cheated by the oversimplification of this game over the years, so maybe I'm going to try my best not to oversimplify it this time, even though we are speedrunning the reviews today. So, Beyond Good and Evil stars Jade and her friend, I guess, who is a human pig named Paige. But it's Jade's journey, essentially. She is very much the protagonist. She is a martial artist, also a journalist, also, I guess, a mercenary. She wears a lot of hats, for the fact that she doesn't actually wear a hat at all. It's more like a headband. She wears a lot of headbands. And so basically, she has to deal with both on her, not only does she have to deal with aliens trying to invade and take over the Hillis, I guess Hillis. I think it's Hillis.
I'm not too sure. I am sure of one thing though. Raider Biz just subbed for the 27th month. For some reason, the sound effects still aren't working right. So
fucking yeah.
There we go. All taken care of.
Nice.
Raider Biz, thank you as always for your support. Enjoy the emotes, enjoy the kitties. Beyond Good and Evil. Very excited to see this.
Yeah. Like I said, it basically, as the protagonist, then not only are you having to deal with the alien invasion and possibly, subjugation of your home planet of Hillis, you're also broke, and the power gets shut off on your house, which, of course, disables the meteorite or the meteor shield or whatever. Like, you're basically, she lives in a lighthouse, and essentially it becomes, like, vulnerable. So you have to earn money quickly in order to continue surviving and being able to make a difference in this world. So you take on jobs. Those jobs become levels. And you also, in the middle of all this, if you take photography or pictures of various animals that you see throughout the game, then you can instantly exchange them for a monetary reward. You're very much motivated to do this by the fact that you travel around the world in a hovercraft and eventually other vehicles, apparently. And you have to build on that hovercraft to get to the next area to do the next things. And so you need that money to kind of, move the game along. So it does have the appearance of like an open world kind of game, but it's no sandbox. It basically really keeps you on task. You get voicemails all the time. Literally, they're emails that are read to you. You also, sometimes you'll get CDs that contain information and you pop them into like an actual CD player. This is how you save your game. You actually have to go through the motions of finding a save one of the disc reader kind of things and popping in your game save disc in game again. And the whole process takes a while, but it gives it a nice 20 years ago feel. So yeah, the missions, like I said, the photography is persistent throughout. You can always, anytime you see something new, it's worth your while to take its picture in order to get some money. Like I said, this is rewarding and instant, so it's not like it doesn't seem to have a big burdensomeness to it, which I find that the whole game has a lack of burdensomeness. So you do go into dungeons and fight enemies, and you do perform little tricks and, solve puzzles and stuff. But it's like solving puzzles often is just finding the right stuff and hitting the action button. And the action button's a catch-all for like different things that Jade should do. So that's kind of cool because sometimes, if a game gives you an exhaustive list of moves that you only end up using twice in the whole game, that's kind of a bummer. So I like simplifying it to just action. There's still some things to figure out in the game and such, but it's really charming and cinematic all throughout. Like actually reminds me of stuff that they do like in the modern Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, where, you're just moving along and you'll have a little cutscene or you'll have a little conversation that kind of tells you what you're doing, but also builds the world, which is great. The character and settings are all really cool. Most of the people are like kind of animals or kind of human or close to human. And again, if you, you know, take a picture of a rhinoceros salesman or something like that, that counts as an animal. So, you know, you can take people's pictures while you're at it. You can take pictures of maps and scan them, and that puts the map in your inventory kind of thing. And yeah, the gameplay style keeps shifting between, you know, like I said, running around, doing action, taking pictures, riding around on your boat. As soon as you get your boat fixed after the initial voyage, then you get put into a boss fight where you have to shoot down this this invading alien thing. And that's really fun. And then you get to race your boat. There's so much to do in this game, and I really enjoy that about it. So yeah, basically that leads to the 20th Anniversary Edition. So the 20th Anniversary Edition has a bunch of extra content in it. It has behind-the-scenes videos and pictures showing kind of making-of type of stuff, which is really cool. Apparently it has some QOL that I just don't know because I haven't played the original game, so I can't really compare it. But I can say that, yeah,
it finally has inverted controls, which is... Very welcome.
You can invert the controls on actually not only your character's camera, but also the camera that say when you're looking through your camera, you can switch those controls around too, and when you're driving your boat. So you've actually got three different sets of controls that can be inverted. So I didn't know that was QOL for this, but yeah, that's a welcome thing for sure. I definitely switched them all to inverted on the Y-axis because I always do.
Hashtag Team Invert.
Yeah. The other thing is that, of course, the entire game is upgraded to HD, new textures. You know, things on the wall are, like, fully readable. Like, you can read small text and, like, little details everywhere, so that's really nice. Music apparently is upgraded, but I, again, don't know how to compare it to the original. Or, I mean, I do know how, but I just didn't. The only thing, of course, and, you know, say it with me now, it does have a few performance issues on the Switch. Yeah, of course, us old Switch heads are used to this by now, but let me break it down. So apparently in the PS5 and Xbox ports of this, the frame rate has been upgraded to a smooth 60 FPS. This being a 20-year-old game, it seems a matter of course. The Switch, of course, stays at 30, which is fine. I mean, I've been playing 30 FPS games for, well, over 20 years, that's for sure. But, like, for instance, when I got to the first dungeon and I walked under a waterfall, it suddenly got real choppy. So there's certain effects that did not really get streamlined in the porting process that kind of slow the whole thing down. I haven't run into any place where this is a gameplay issue, but it is certainly a little bit of a bummer when you're going for this and you know that it's not present in other versions of the game.
Yeah.
So, but whatever. I've really, really, really liked playing through this, and I really hope that people will experience it more this time around because it was not a popular release when it came out due to the fact that it was 2003 and, like, you know, the market was crowded at that point. So it did slip under the radar, but of course it's got its own cult following, and I really hope that that expands to a new appreciation for the game, especially as the longest awaited sequel to date, because it just beat out Duke Nukem Forever, is apparently beyond the horizon. So
allegedly still in development, so...
There's even up to, like, just, you know, recently, they're saying it's still coming.
Yeah.
So they even got a new voice actor for the lady, because the old voice actor passed away, sadly.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, this one clocks in at $20. What's your verdict?
That is absolutely a buy it, because remakes of this caliber, that is to say, with this much effort put into modernizing them, even with performance issues aside, this is normally something you're going to see for like $40 or $50, maybe even $60 if Nintendo was handling it. So Ubisoft keeping it down to a cool Jackson is pretty darn good. So I'd say this is worth the bones. Absolutely.
Cool beans. Great. Well, we made it through. Only about an hour. We did it.
Ooh. I was letting the cat out.
I just thought no one cared.
No, he was sitting there politely through my whole review, and so I should have just grabbed the microphone and carried it with me, but...
Oh, well. But that is it for this episode. Thanks to the two of you for being here, hanging out the whole time. Big thanks to Horror Acolyte for writing in that awesome review of Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I am a lot more interested in that game than I was at the start of the show. It sounds like a blast. I might have to pick it up. Music, we said before, we're going to play some Me Channel music from the 1UPS. Some fucking heavy metal from the 1UPS. Some thrash. Rock your faces off.
Me thrash.
Yeah, does anyone have any final words before we dive into some hardcore metal?
Fucking yeah.